the main factor was that whenever I went to a training, had a training session, I focused on it. I had a purpose for that single training session.
The Triathlon Show 150. Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host, Michael, and today's episode is another case study, this time with my compatriot, Petri Karvinen from Finland. But first, big thanks to our sponsors. First, we have Precision Hydration that you can find on precisionhydration.com. They help you get hydrated and stay hydrated. And even though summer is now long gone in most of Northern Europe, I'm lucky that we still have very warm and nice weather here in Portugal. But anyways, most of the listeners are probably sooner or later moving to training indoors again a lot, like on the bike, on the turbo trainer. And even though you may think that, okay, it's winter, I don't need to focus on hydration, actually, if you look at the size of the sweat pool below you on the bike trainer, then you can see that you're sweating a lot. And if your sweat sodium content is high, then you're losing a lot of sodium, and that needs to be replaced, or otherwise you're compromising performance. So check out Precision Hydration's content on their blog, for example, and their free online sweat test to learn all about that, what you need to know about electrolytes, performance, cramping, and electrolyte replacement. And if you haven't already, get your first box of electrolytes for free with the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps, on precisionhydration.com. And warm welcome back to Stack. Stack Performance is back as a sponsor, and I've been in touch with Andrew throughout this period since we first connected around his first podcast appearance on the show. Stack has been a previous sponsor as well, and now they're back, and a lot of things have been going on, most important of which is probably their new Halcyon Smart Trainer that has just launched to great reviews. I'm eagerly awaiting mine as well. If you aren't aware, one of the main benefits of Stack's trainers, all of their models, not just this new Halcyon Smart Trainer, is that they're completely silent. So you can watch Netflix, listen to a podcast like this, an audiobook or music, whatever you like, while you're training. And the noise from that you would typically have from a lot of trainers would not disturb you while doing that. In addition, with depending on the model you choose, you have a built-in power meter that is very accurate. And just generally speaking, you get basically all of the real high-end expensive trainer features of other brands, but Stack's pricing is considerably cheaper compared to the competitors in the same feature category. And that's not the only thing. You can get 20% off that already really good price with the discount code TTS20, that's TTS20, on checkout at stackzero.com when you order your trainer, any of their models. All right, so let's dive into the interview with Petri, where we talk about how he trained for Challenge Roth to go 10:30, which is a very good time for an Ironman distance race, on 10 hours of training per week or so. He had a stretch goal of going 10 hours or sub 10 hours. He didn't quite achieve that, but 10:30 is still a very, very good time. So let's hear more about that. And also we'll hear how he used the virtual wind tunnel with me. I provided the virtual wind tunnel service for him to optimize his aerodynamics. So that's a teaser for you to listen through to the end. All right, let's dive in. Today's guest on That Triathlon Show is Petri Karvinen from Finland. This is another case study. Petri, welcome to That Triathlon Show.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
It's great to talk to you again. We've met once and we've interacted through email and that sort of thing before, but we actually met in the part of Finland where I come from originally for a training event that I had there. So it's great to now bring you on the podcast for this interview that we decided that we would do after you complete Challenge Roth, which was your main goal for the season. And that's what we'll talk about a bit in this case study. But first, can you tell us briefly about yourself and your life? Like, what's your career? What's your family life? And that sort of thing. Like,
yeah, I'm 37 years old. I have a wife and a 2-year-old daughter. And as my career choice, I've been drifting into sales since I've been doing that for pretty much since I was 8. So now I'm trying to work the puzzle of stopping shoplifting in the world with a Finnish tech solution.
that's a noble mission. So when and how did you get into triathlon?
Do you want the short version or the longer one and a half minute version?
Do you have a medium version?
I have a medium version, yeah. It all started when my friend Tommy lost a game in the board game Risk, if you know that one.
Yes,
so he had to do the Pirkan Hiihto, which is cross-country skiing in Finland.
And how long is that?
That's 90 kilometers with the traditional style. And he lost the game Risk, so he had to do the skiing. And he doesn't ski, and he never practiced skiing. And that winter, I remember being a very bad winter. And since he finished it, a lot of people had to do it the next year. I never made it that far. But since it kept escalating until August 2010, when they realized that, okay, they're going to do a half triathlon. And I signed up without knowing actually where I signed up for. And I remember saying that, okay, I can do the swimming and the running, but there's no way I'm going to cycle for 45Ks, which basically pretty much tells how much I knew about triathlon. I thought that this distance was half what I was planning to do. So, yeah, from there. And I finished my my first triathlon was a half triathlon in Joroinen in 2011. So,
and
I'm still stuck.
And you did manage to finish it. What were your thoughts like when you finished it? And were you immediately hooked, or did you think never again, but then got around to it?
No, I think I was immediately hooked. My first race was, I think, one of my best races. I finished in 5:18 in that year, or 5:20.
That's a great first half Ironman. How much did you train for that?
That 10 months, basically. I started from pretty much zero. I had never cycled, and I had done some running due to my previous bad football career, but no. So I had to start from scratch, basically.
Mm. And so since then, it reminded me, what year was that again?
That was 2011.
Okay, so seven years ago. And since then, how has your triathlon career progressed? How have you moved up to faster times, moved up the distance? Give us a brief overview of this.
Slowly and easy, because 2012 and 2013 were basically leap years. I did, I think, one or two half triathlons in that period, but I basically stopped training after Joroinen, or stopped training as hard as I did for Joroinen. But I still liked the sport, even though my time was getting worse. But in 2013, I realized that since I enjoy this enough, so I'll kick it up again. And then I signed up for a full distance triathlon in Sweden, Kalmar, for 2014. And about that, I just have to say that if you're planning on doing a full triathlon, do it on purpose, not just to try it. And I tried it out. It was a bad idea. It hurt a lot, but I finished it. So
what do you mean when you say that you tried it out? I know that means that you didn't really train a lot for it, but how much did you train for it?
I don't have the exact stats from that period, but looking at my stats in that area, I think I trained about 4 hours a week for a full distance. So I'm pretty happy to say I came in underprepared.
Yeah,
at least.
Okay. So after that, what did you move on to?
After that, I signed up for a couple of bike races since my friends were going to this Autoroute competition in the Alps and the Pyrenees and the Italian Alps. What were they called? Oh, whatever.
Dolomites.
So I signed up for Dolomites. Yes, so I signed up for 2015, I went for the haute route in Pyrenees, which is basically a week-long bike race covering about 1,000 kilometers, but covering up to 21 kilometers in height, so or in elevation. So that was a lot different cycling that I was what I'm used to here at home. And that was so much fun that I decided to do it again in the French Alps in 2016. And after that, it's been on and off going to different triathlon races every now and then, at least once a year, at least.
And this year, yeah. By the way, I need to talk about the Dolomites here. I just got back from a week in the Dolomites, or a week in Italy with 3 or 4 days in the Dolomites and cycling a lot. And it is the most stunning place that I've ever been to. And they have this road cycling race that's called the Maratona delle Dolomiti. And once I heard about it, I knew that this is something that I have to do. So it's very high up on my bucket list of races to do one day. But yeah, so I can completely understand how you got into the haute route races and that kind of cycling, because it's very fun and very different from what we are used to, because in southern Finland, where we both come from, it's very flat, so not something to do. Anyway,
my first real uphill was the first uphill that we started in the Pyrenees.
Yeah,
and then I really started wondering what the hell have I signed up for.
Yeah,
it was the first, and there were 20 more to go.
Totally understand. So this year, your big goal was the Challenge Roth, which is a legendary race in Germany, and it's known for being a fast race and a very big race with very very passionate audience. So another bucket list race for many, for sure. What were your goals going into it, and when did you start preparing for it?
I didn't set a specific time goal for this one. I just knew that I wanted to finish it better and happier than I did with the Ironman Kalmar race. But so I started a project in the end of August last year, since my off season was basically last August when I was sick during almost whole of August. So then I started training for it systematically in the end of August. And my goal was, well, I was aiming for anything between 10 and 10 and a half hours in that time. But I had no idea how realistic it was. And I was planning also that I'll do the training and I'll see how my level sets, and then I'll start preparing for a more detailed goal.
So just to give a point of reference, what was your time in Kalmar that you just trained for 4 hours per week? And
It was 12 hours.
Okay, so go on with the process training for Roth.
Yes, and for Roth, I just pretty much had to come up with the fundamentals I need to do, since I knew that I couldn't train that much. As you've been talking in the show for training 15 hours a week, I knew that that was going to be impossible. I was aiming for closer to 10, and I knew that if I have this much time, I need to make it count. So that's where I needed to start from.
Yeah, that's something that I think is worth pointing out here, that that is a very good order of doing things. Like, you need to know as an athlete, how much time do you realistically have available to you, and then make the most of that time with obviously taking into account what your goal race is. But you can't plan for doing 15 hours per week if you will only have 10 hours per week, because then you're not going to be able you're going to plan for something that is not possible for you to execute, and then it will become very haphazard. So it's much better to be realistic from the start and then plan optimally for whatever time you have available. So that's a very good approach.
So I started with meeting with my friend. Thank you, Tatu, if you're listening to this. And we went through what needs to be done in order to finish the race properly and like have a healthy, good training session, 10 months that I had for the race. And so we created this pretty vague yearly plan on what I need to do. And my second step was to get another fundamental going on, since I knew that my lower back was hurting when I ran. So I started with a physiotherapist. And I went to talk to them to see what needs to be done. And we went through to prevent any kind of injuries regarding running. And
What kind of interventions did you end up doing based on that meeting the physiotherapist?
Well, the physiotherapist, he had a look at my running, and he noticed that there's a problem with my hip basically when I run. So my hip sinks in a way when I run, and we tested it's not a problem of strength since I had pretty strong hips apparently, but I had no way. I was just using it wrong, so I had to keep doing the exercises that strengthen the hip in the right manner. So
learn to activate the hips basically in the right movement patterns in the running. Okay.
Yes. So it was that sort to start from. And the next part that I had to make sure was that I didn't want to get sick during the whole training period. So the only way I found were, of course, I needed to start planning my sleep since that's where I started my training from. And then I found this idea of cold exposure. So I started taking a cold, very cold shower every morning for a minute or two to prevent me from getting sick. I don't know how it was magic or it was science, but never got sick during that process. So in that way, the fundamentals went right.
That's so let me stop you there and highlight some key things. I think these are really, really, really good things that you did. And visiting the physio, even if you wouldn't have had a problem with your hip or with your lower back when running, I think any athlete starting a, let's say, a training campaign for a big goal or just getting to do a yearly checkup with a physio should be required almost, because you want to prevent injuries. You don't want to treat injuries once they've already happened and become worse and worse. So, and I think this is something that a lot of athletes overlook, getting to see a good physio that has the knowledge, the experience with endurance athletes about their problems and their requirements. So that's one thing that I want to highlight that was brilliant to do, to make sure that you can do the training required to do a good race almost a year later. And then also focusing on sleep and preventing illnesses, another very, very smart choice, and looking at like the big picture and understanding that keeping healthy and doing all the training week in, week out is one of the biggest levers of performance gains that you can have. So I really like that approach. It's very smart. Were there anything left with the fundamentals that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, regarding the sleeping was one of my main points when I started, since of course having a 2-year-old kid at home might affect that, and it does affect that, but I made sure as much as I could that I could get the adequate amount of sleep, and then I started to see how much I can train after the good night's sleep. So, and I noticed that if I negotiated too much with myself about the amount of sleep, it ruined the practice next day. So it was a pretty short lesson.
It's funny because just yesterday I did another age group case study interview that will be released already when the listeners listen to this interview. That one was with Ian Haken, and he mentioned sleep as one of his main focus areas as well in his quest of qualifying for Kona. And it's it can't be overstated how important that sleep really is.
It doesn't help if you have to train, if you have to start training at 6 a.m. but you haven't slept. So the training is going to be bad anyway. So
yeah.
I'd rather sleep than do a bad practice session.
Exactly, yeah, and then come back well rested and do it. Maybe skip one session that you had planned and do the sessions that you time for well, instead of doing everything half-assed because you didn't get the sleep that you required. So for the training itself, what did it look like? What was like the big picture periodization, if you will, for the ROF preparation?
Yeah, I had a yearly calendar, basically divided in three at this point. Oh, sorry, four. The first part was the autumn. What do I need to do in the between August and maybe December. And then what do I do in the winter? What do I do in the spring? And the last month for my training. And basically it was as simple as possible. The fall was meant for basically just strength training. So I did a lot of gym work, and since that was something I was lacking for a couple of years, or actually even 4-5 years. And I did a lot of stair running. So I started my running program, or I started to increase it by having at least one stair running session a week, which included a lot of stairs here in Turku.
And what would a stair running workout look like? Can you give an example of that?
I had the same route here in Turku for pretty much every week. I think there's about 600 steps on that route, and it's 9.5 kilometers only. So there's a lot of elevation regarding that. I took it easy, so I didn't go full speed on the stairs, but I knew that there were enough stairs to make it hurt.
See,
my legs. So
it's essentially a muscular endurance workout that is one of the key factors for long course triathlon, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
And in the winter, when I could go cycling, I did a lot of low cadence practice as well.
Yeah.
During the cycling.
And for the gym work that you did, what sort of strength training did you do?
Well, since I was starting from my 4 or 5 year hiatus, I need to start from scratch. But basically, I was aiming for the low rep, high weights kind of situation. And I was doing it so that I had the gym session twice a week for the fall. And in the end of December, I think, was so that I cut it down to one session a week, since I started increasing running and cycling then.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been listening to the podcast, obviously, because maybe you would have done that anyway. But that's exactly the kind of approach that we've been talking about.
Yes, I cannot say I haven't got any ideas. And I actually started listening to this podcast series from the strength training episode that you had, number 50.
Okay, that's a funny coincidence. so then, in winter, when you started ramping up the training a bit, what did that look like?
In the winter, the focus was on power. So on the trainer, I had a lot of VO2 max or sweet spot exercises. And I was supposed to do a little harder intervals with running, but then the winter turned out to be pretty cold. So I had to cut down on that a bit, since I couldn't do those exercises outside. You don't want to kill yourself with interval running when it's minus 15 or minus 20.
Yeah. A treadmill would have been a good option there, maybe. But
treadmill would have been a good option, but then again, I hate running inside, so
yeah,
that was a bit of a choice that I had to make there.
Yeah, and for the swim, what role did that play?
In the swim, I think I did way too little swimming, or at least I thought it for the whole year until I broke my swimming record, but. I only had one session a week regarding swimming. It was a train. We had a coach in the session, so it was a very effective one. But then again, it was only Monday nights that I gave up to swimming. So not very much, but still I could do the swim in an hour and 5. So not bad.
Not bad at all. And I saw you swim at the training event, and it was very impressive swimming for somebody who had only been swimming once per week. I didn't realize that it was that little that you had been swimming, although we talked a little bit about it, I think. But you definitely have. If you would swim more, you could be a really good swimmer, I think. But it was already a good, very good result. And with your time budget, maybe the best thing to do in that scenario to focus more on the bike.
Yes, and it was also a fixed decision that I knew that if I put more time on the swimming, I knew that I could cut some time out of the swimming. But if I put the same time in running or cycling, I knew that the effect in the whole picture would be a bit bigger with cycling and running. So
more return on investment.
Yes.
Okay. So, and then moving into spring, into the next period, what did you do then?
Then I started doing a lot more brick training, so cycling and running together. And focusing more on the race pace with longer runs and longer bike trainings. I basically ran a half marathon every single Saturday for the whole session. So there was that one element, but I started increasing the length of the other running sessions as well.
Mm. So for this period, when you're getting closer to the race and you're still doing it on your time budget of at most 10 hours per week, usually, can you give an example of what your entire training week might look like? So other listeners in your situation with limited time can get an idea.
Okay. In the spring, the regular week was, I had a gym session on Monday mornings before work. And I had the swim practice on Monday evenings after work. So I could get stopped by at home and then leave for another practice. On Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I usually had a run or a bike session that was a bit faster pace. So I could do a little sweet spot work on the bike or have some intervals or faster running on those days. So then I could stress out a bit more, even though I had limited amount of time to use. And Thursdays was another run or cycling session, depending on the work week. Friday, I usually had off, so there was nothing planned. And on Saturdays and Sundays, I had a long run and a long bike.
So, how long were those, roughly?
The long run was usually between hour and a half, between 2 hours and 15, depending on the week. And the long bike would be anything from 2.5 hours to 6 hours. I didn't do many 6 hour sessions on the bike, I have to confess, but yeah, that was the plan.
What was the most common or the average length for your long rides when you were getting closer to your race? Was it 3 hours, 4 hours, or?
Between 3 and 4 hours. So it was usually 100K-ish.
And in those rides, did you include race intensity or quality work, even harder intervals, or was it just time in the saddle? How did you do that? And same question for the run, really, the long run.
Yeah, in the longer runs, I basically ran for race tempo all the way. So yeah. I don't know if that was a good idea or a bad idea, but I decided that I need to get comfortable with this anyway. So might as well run it as long as I could recover from it. And on the bike sessions, I took it easier, but there was usually an hour between 1 and 2 hours of race intensity. Yes.
Okay. And then in the last, in summer or the last few, let's call it the last 8 weeks or so, did anything change, or was this like the basic structure all the way, almost leading up into?
No, this was basically the structure all the way. I gave up gym work in the start of May, so two weeks before the race. I started focusing, or I did a bit more of those very long sessions that got me used to the long runs and long brick works. And I think my longest training session was 7.5 hours. So,
and
I started putting those into the calendar.
Yeah. So then, when you were getting closer to the race, what was your race goal? Had it changed from the 10 to 10.5 hours, or was that still the target? And how did you feel about it?
Yes, that was when I started considering it a realistic plan. Between 10 and 10.5 hours, nothing went wrong. Basically, that I didn't have a fixed time schedule. I thought that if on a good day, on a normal day, I would reach probably 10 hours and 15 minutes. If something went a bit wrong that I couldn't foresee with this experience, it would be around 10:30. And if everything went smoothly and perfectly and even better than I expected, I would be closer to 10 hours. So,
and how did it go?
I think it was my lack of experience that killed my running a little, since I started way too eagerly on the run. And I had to slow down on the run. So I think I could have cut down maybe 15 minutes on the run if I had done it properly. And I basically forgot to eat during the run. I don't know why that happened. But yes, the total time was 10.5 hours. So I'm not going to say I'm unhappy about the result, but I know there's room for improvement. So guess I'll have to do it again someday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a very respectable time for anybody, and especially for somebody who is doing it on a limited, a low volume training approach when we talk about Ironman training. So, and which is one of the main reasons that that I thought and that we discussed about having this interview in the first place. So to describe a case study of.
Yes, what you've been talking in the show is that you need to train for 15-ish hours a week. And I was like, okay, I'm training 8 hours a week. What am I doing wrong? Since my running and my cycling and everything was going smoothly and I felt fine with it. So
I don't know if I've been talking about that. Sometimes we have examples with 15-hour weeks, but I think you can only train the amount of hours that you have available, though. So
that's true. Yeah.
So I disagree with that. I've been talking about having to train 15 hours.
Maybe I was just getting the picture that everybody. It might have been also a picture of the Purple Batch podcast that I listen to regularly as well. So that when they have guests, they tend to work a lot more than I do on the spot.
Yeah, yeah. I usually ask for examples if it's about Ironman training, and when I ask for typical training weeks from coaches, for example, I ask for examples in the 10 to 15 hour range because that's quite normal for most people, but you can only train for as much time as you have available, and it's definitely possible to train for an Ironman on 10 hours. So I don't think that there's the question isn't about how many hours do you need to train. The question is how many hours do you have available for training, and then doing the most out of those hours. So
yes, and the less you have, the more emphasis you have to put on the exercises themselves. You have to focus, and you have to make it count. Since I didn't have time for slack hours in that 8 hours that I had.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what do you think are some of the key factors in your approach that? We talked about a few of them already, but are there any other things that made this approach still enable you to do a very good time at Rove? Why do you think it worked well? What were the key factors?
I think the main factor was that whenever I went to a training, had a training session, I focused on it. I had a purpose for that single training session. I knew that quite a few times on when I started my new job in January. So when I went to the gym in the morning, had a day at the office and went swimming in the evening. I actually did it even so that I went to the pool, decided that, okay, tonight is not the night that I need to swim, since I knew that I couldn't concentrate it on the level that I found reasonable. So then I just went home. And as long as I knew that I can concentrate on this particular session, I know it's going to be a good one if I have planned it or I knew what the purpose of the session is. So
That's a very, very good takeaway. And anything else to add? Any other factors?
No, not quite. I think the less time you have, the more you have, the less you have slack in your training. So make it count.
And so what do you think are some common mistakes that age group triathletes and especially those self-coached make that prevent them from going faster when there is a limited time budget for them to work with?
I think the biggest wisdom that I've heard about going faster is that you need to go faster in order to go faster. So there's a lot of this very low intensity work during the week, which needs to be there. Like you said, it's got to be at least 80%, but that the rest of that time you need to jack up the intensity to get your physical adaptation. You're never going slow all the time in the training sessions.
Yeah, and depending on how much you train, like that 80% rule may go out the window, really.
Yeah.
I don't use it all the time when I do training programs for if people have, let's say, 8 hours per week to train. I definitely don't follow the 80-20 principle in most of those cases. I might do for the run specifically because that's where there is the most risk,
yeah,
but definitely not on the bike, absolutely not on the swim.
I actually started counting because I think you had an episode about that in April. And yeah, I started putting my zones into time slots, and I noticed that I'm on my zone one and my zone two. I'm training that 80% pretty much exactly every week. And going up.
That's interesting.
And going up to zone 3 and zone 4 and zone 5, they were divided in the rest of the 20%.
Okay. Yeah. And finally, what we had another session on the same event day. We had a virtual wind tunnel session in addition to the training that we did, the swim, biking, and running. And so people that are interested in the virtual wind tunnel should go and listen to my interview with Andrew Buckroll in episode 40-something. I'll link to it in the show notes. And I'll also link to my website where I have a description of that. But just briefly, can you give an overview of what you learned through that and if you managed to use it and benefit from it in your cycling?
Yeah, I did use it. And the first thing I did was I got rid of the water bottles behind my back, since it seemed to be a bit of a constraint in my wind tunnel results. So I moved all the bottles to the front between my hands. So I have a bottle so I can drink straight out of between my hands, and right after that bottle is another filling up bottle. So I didn't need to reach behind my back for the bottles anymore.
Yeah.
And my position changed a bit, since the recommendation in the virtual wind tunnel was that I need to have this praying mantis position. I tried a couple of positions. I couldn't make the change as hard as they probably suggested, since it started hurting my thighs if the angle was too aggressive. But I took it up a bit, and I'm happy with the position, and I'm happy with how my cycling kind of went. Well, I'm kind of happy how my cycling went. I cannot blame the position, but the wind.
Do you remember what the predicted, the estimated watt savings were for those things that you made?
Yeah, it was a lot. I think was the praying mantis position was up to like 4% even. So basically the whole setup, if I changed it, would be between 10 and 15 watts, which is quite a lot when my race watts were 220 watts for the whole race.
That's very significant. One final question before the rapid fire questions: what tips can you share around time management and fitting in training around the rest of your life?
Definitely use your commutes, since if I went to work by car, it would take me about 35-40 minutes a day. But now that I'm running or cycling to work, I can at least use that. And if I leave earlier, of course, I can do a session in the morning just coming to work. That's definitely the one.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And
anything else?
Yeah. Like you've been saying in the podcast, use your mornings, since I have a kid at home and I don't want to be out all evenings. So I did pretty much all my sessions during the morning, before anybody else was awake. So just making sure that I got enough sleep to do it. So didn't want to risk sleep there.
Okay. So let's wrap up with the rapid fire questions that you know, I'm sure. The first one is, what's your favorite book, blog, or resource related to triathlon?
I'm going to say something nobody else has said so far. So it's a book from Anders Eriksson called Peak. And it's not specifically about triathlon, but it's about training and how world-class performers train. He's been studying training for the last 40 years, and it's a mind-blowingly good book. Definitely recommend it. I've read it twice, and I'm going to go through it a third time.
That's a great one. Yeah, I always enjoy hearing new suggestions. And he's the man behind the 10,000-hour rule, isn't he?
Yes. Yes, he's the one who came up with it, and Malcolm Gladwell was the one who made it popular. So
popularized it.
You can blame Ericsson for the idea.
Yeah. And what's your favorite piece of gear or equipment?
Definitely my InfoCrank power meter. Since I didn't buy a new bike this year, since the InfoCrank didn't fit on the new the new model, so it's a power meter that I can change between my bikes, and I wouldn't do without.
Yeah. And what do you wish you had known or wish you had done differently at some point in your triathlon journey?
This was a hard one. I'm going to say nothing. I've been enjoying the whole 7 year triathlon career that I have had, and it hasn't been as progressive maybe as somebody else would have wished it to be, but it's been progressive enough, and I've enjoyed it all the way. So I'm going to say I've done it perfectly as suitable for me.
That's a great answer. No regrets. Okay, Petri, it was a real pleasure having you on the show. And do you have any Twitter or social media, that Instagram, that people can follow you on? And do you post triathlon things there? Or?
Well, I post occasional triathlon things in Finnish on Twitter. It's Pete Karvinen. So
the Finnish listeners can look me up. At least can go on.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so
much. If the English versions want to start learning Finnish, then it's PT Karvinen.
So. Oh, trust me, I don't recommend that. It's difficult.
And it's, pointless as well.
Okay, thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thanks, Michael. Cheers.
So there you have it. I have to admit that as I record this conclusion and the intro as well, it's been quite some time since we did the interview with Petri, so I don't quite recall all of the things that were my main takeaways at the moment, and I forgot to take notes of that, which I usually do right away. I do know that the one thing that I paid attention to that I still remember very clearly is that Petri had a strong focus on staying healthy throughout the training cycle and getting quality sleep, quality recovery, quality nutrition. And that, I think, is as good a takeaway as any. If you are training 10 hours per week, you can definitely do that and do an iron distance race and do very well. But if you do that and you're not top class in your sleep habits, your nutrition habits, then it becomes much more difficult than if you actually have top class habits outside of your training. As usual, you can find the show notes for this episode on thattriathlonshow.com. Any questions or comments, leave them there. And thank you so much for everybody who has been emailing in, telling me how you're spreading the word about the podcast and rating and reviewing. I really, really appreciate it, guys. I can't thank you enough. I'm so grateful for you. Just for the sake of being listeners, that is something that I do not take for granted. But when you spread the word, when you rate and review, that's even better. And I'm full of gratitude for that. So thank you. And also thank you for all the questions that are coming in for the Q&A episodes. I've had some good feedback on the first couple of them already, and I'm so happy that it provides an outlet for me to directly help some athletes outside of those that I coach directly. It's a big win-win. And of course, if you want to send in your questions, do so to my email, michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and that's Michael with a K. Put a good subject line so I don't lose it, like podcast question, listener question, something like that. Big thanks to our sponsors that keep this show going. First, we have Stack, that you can find on stackzero.com, or just click the link in the description. Stack produces the world's quietest bike trainers, no noise and also no tire wear, which is an important benefit because you have those magnets rather than a flywheel or something like that to provide resistance. It is also very much a portable and affordable trainer, and even more so when you use the discount code TTS20 for 20% off on any of the Stack models. And big thanks to Precision Hydration, that you can find at precisionhydration.com. Click through in the episode description to get your individualized hydration strategy for your next race. That's their free online sweat test, which consists of just 10 simple questions in a quiz form that you can answer very easily without any prior knowledge. And that will give you a very good estimate of what your sweat sodium content might be and what your sweat rate might be. Based on that, you will get your hydration strategy. And if you want to get your first box for free, use the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW, all one word, all caps. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.